club with the Vikings.
And welcome to Eye to the Sky, the UFO synopsis here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, Dee Andrew, and tonight my guest is Grant Cameron. Grant Cameron is a Canadian author, researcher, and expert on the ET UFO aspects of the U.S. president. In the past few years, Mr. Cameron has turned his research interests into the involvement and actions of the presidents of the United States in the UFO problem. He has made 20-plus trips to the National Archives and most of the various presidential archives looking for presidential material. One highlight in his presidential UFO research was the chance to question Vice President Dick Cheney on his knowledge of the UFO subject. Another highlight of the presidential UFO research was an FOIA request to the White House Office of Science and Technology, which yielded 1,000 pages of UFO documents from the Clinton administration. Many of these findings have been written up on the presidential UFO website. The address for Grant's website is www.presidentialufo.com, and I highly recommend that everyone take some time to look through the vast amounts of interesting information that he has assembled here. And welcome, Grant. Thank you for being with us tonight.
Yes, thanks for having me. Thanks for showing the interest.
Oh, well, when we met in Laughlin, you were very excited because you had gotten word that you got the document from the Clinton Library that you had put in your request for.
Yes, I'd gotten a second set. I had gotten the original when they released, when it first started, they released 18 files. I think 12 of them were UFO files, and that included John Podesta's files on UFOs and some photographs from the J.Y. Ranch, Rockefeller Ranch in Wyoming, where the rumored story was that Rockefeller sat down with the president and Hillary Clinton and talked to them about UFOs. That was the first batch. When I was in Laughlin, and I guess your guests should actually know that a conference is a good place to be. I mean, you and I met there, and you meet all sorts of people there. You get to see people that they're just ordinary people like everybody else, and the interest is very high in the room. People that you spend a whole week just talking about UFOs, so it's an interesting place to be. And when I was in Laughlin, I received word that I had that the Clinton Library had okayed some more files, and these were 450 pages of files on Area 51. So I was quite kind of excited. I still haven't seen them. I'm still waiting for them to be shipped. I paid for them a couple weeks ago. They still haven't arrived. I think the vast majority of those files will deal with a lawsuit that occurred at Area 51 dealing with the burning of toxic chemicals that was taking place, and a bunch of the workers sued the government. But the interesting thing about it is if you take a look at the release from the Clinton Library, all the files are marked Area 51. And I have a letter from the Air Force already in 1999, as late as 1999, denying that Area 51 existed, that there is no such place, doesn't exist. And here we have now 450 pages of files that have been released that are all marked Area 51 files. So the place does exist, and the Clinton files prove it. We'll see what else is in the files, but we are now in a situation, I guess you may know because I think I've sent you some emails, that the files have created quite a stir in the United States, basically because when it first opened up, a lot of people don't understand how the archives works or how files are released by either the National Archives or by presidential libraries, and that is it's on a first-come, first-served basis. And because when Bill and Hillary Clinton were in the White House, and I was lucky enough when they were in the White House to get 1,000 pages of files out of the Science Advisor's Office, I already was filing my Freedom of Information Act requests because I had all the names of all the people inside the Clinton administration who were involved in trying to get disclosure, trying to get this thing opened up. And so my Freedom of Information Act requests were available. I filed them as soon as they were allowed. That was January the, I think it was 20th, 2006. And so what happened was a lot of my UFO requests, and I have about 100 of them, are at the front of the queues. They have 17 different lines. They have a line for complex requests, simple requests, audiovisual, photos, classified. So they build these different queues. So a lot of the UFO requests are at the beginning of the queues. And as you know, the presidential election is going on, and everybody is all hot and bothered about getting Hillary's files out of the presidential library. And a lot of the people, USA Today, a lot of the very conservative groups were very upset when the first release took place on November the 2nd. None of Hillary's files were released, but all these UFO files were released. And so there was a number of articles written around the United States about the fact that Hillary was withholding the files, her and Bill were holding the files, and that they're releasing these stupid UFO files. What's the point? We need the good stuff on Hillary. And they don't realize that the main group that is pushing this is Judicial Watch, which is a conservative legal public action group, has filed two lawsuits with the National Archives. And theirs was filed long after me. They filed 3 months late, and now they want their stuff because they think it's important, should be processed first. And we are now in a situation where they have taken the National Archives to court. They have the latest release from the Clinton Library was the Hillary calendars, and they are now pushing for her telephone files. And they have they're in front of the federal court right at the moment. And part of that, the judge was going to rule against them. And at that point, they started describing this system where they have 17 queues and things don't necessarily get filed in order. And the judge has allowed them discovery. And they are very upset about the UFO files. And they are going to put one of the Clinton officials from the library under oath. And they are, a number of the questions, I've seen the questions, are going to be how many UFO files have been requested. Are they ahead of the Judicial Watch FOIA? Are they behind? How many of these have been processed? Because they're very upset that these UFO files would get processed before what they think is very important stuff, the Hillary documents and her calendars and telephone things. So we actually are in a situation now where the Clinton Library is going to argue on behalf of the UFO files. They have their lawyer is going to say it's first come, first serve. These are there. We as archivists at the library don't judge the validity of a Freedom of Information Act request. We don't say this is important, that's not important. We basically go first come, first serve, and we now are in a position where we're going to have a government lawyer actually fighting on behalf of UFO researchers who, I don't know if anybody else has, I know I have quite a few there, but we'll be fighting on behalf of the fact that the UFOs were filed first and they should be processed first.
Yeah, and I find it rather ironic that the letterhead for Judicial Watch says, because nobody is above the law.
Yes, and I did actually write them, when they first filed their lawsuit last year, I actually wrote them a letter because they moved from, I believe it was 167th in line. They had millions of pages ahead of them. And people don't realize, this just moves at a snail's pace, this releasing of files. And I wrote them a letter and basically said, you say your letterhead says nobody's above the law, and because you have a lot of money and you have power, you filed this lawsuit, and you've been moved to the front of the queue. And that's basically what happened, was they formed a new queue. There used to be 16 different lines. And then they formed a 17th line, which was repeatedly requested items. And they put the Hillary's calendars into that queue, which moved them from 167th in line up to the head of one of the queues. And that's why in this recent release, the schedules of Hillary Clinton were released. They should never have been released because they are way back in the line. So I wrote a letter to Judicial Watch, and I said to them, I think you, based upon your philosophy and what you say, I think you guys should withdraw your lawsuit, withdraw your Freedom of Information Act, and get back in line with everybody else. Because I was just at the Reagan Library. After the Laughlin Conference, I went to the Reagan Library. And to give you an idea of how this thing works, I was there, and I was there 5 years ago. And I had made a request for three different files. One was Frank Carlucci's files. Now, Frank Carlucci has always been rumored as being one of the inside cabal people who is in control of the UFO thing. So I saw a bunch of files there that I thought would be interesting. So I phoned, filed for his and for two other people, and I received word, this would be about a month before Laughlin, that these files were now ready. Two of the files, I couldn't even remember what I'd requested. I mean, I didn't recognize the names of the people I was requesting, and it had been so long since I requested. It took them 5 years to file this stuff. So I went down, and I made a trip from Laughlin after the convention. I went to the Reagan Library, which is in Simi Valley, just outside of Los Angeles. And there was about 475 pages that were released. It took me about an hour and a half to go through them, because basically what it was folders full of withdrawal files. And it said, this has been withdrawn for this reason, you know, national security, this reason, that reason. And I even have a slide in some of the upcoming lectures that I'm going to do, which actually shows these are files not like files like the Clintons that are only 5 years old. These are files from 1982, 1983. And one of them was two toasts that Ronald Reagan had given at Geneva. And the reason I was interested in Geneva was because this is where he made this comment about how the world would unite if we were faced with an alien threat from outside the Earth. And he had mentioned this to Gorbachev at Geneva. So I was very interested in the Geneva files and the conversations that were taking place behind the scenes and in the negotiations. So one of the files that was withdrawn was two toasts that had been given. There was two different dinners, and Ronald Reagan had given a toast at both of the dinners. Both of those were withdrawn, B1, national security, absolutely no exemption, completely withdrawn, just all you have is a withdrawal file. And these are files that are from 1984. So you're talking 23 years old, and they're still declassified national security. They're basically, there's a basic waste of time being there. It was just, people don't realize that even if they process the files, as with my files, the first set that I got was 70 pages, and I think they released maybe, I don't know, 25 of those. The rest were withheld for one reason or another, you know, personal material or whatever, that the American government has gotten into a situation where secrecy is upmost to a lot of the ways things operate. And so therefore, even though a lot of files will be released, and people, for example, were very upset about the Hillary calendar, that very little was there and a lot of it was blacked out. Well, that's the way it works with everything. This is not the Clintons. This is how the National Archives works. This is how the presidential libraries work, that there are so many exemptions that history is basically something that maybe you won't be able to tell for 75 or 100 years until they release this kind of stuff. There is a pile of material that is still being withheld. For example, John McCain is still requesting that material from the Vietnam War be declassified. So this is something that people figure this is part of government. They want this type of secrecy. And for historians and people who are trying to get to the truth, it is a long, hard road to try to piece together anything, even if you know who the people are, to get that material. For example, John Podesta had come out in, I believe it was 2002, had come out for sci-fi. He was brought in by sci-fi. He made a big speech that UFOs should be opened up. And yet, when his files are released from the Clinton, a lot of it was basically withheld. So we really don't know what's going on even after we see the files.
And then I noticed on the Hillary's calendar that it backs up that she was at Rockefeller's ranch.
Yes, and this is the thing. Like, I realized we wouldn't get anything from that. We may get something from the telephone or from the trip files. There's a whole series of types of files that you can request to try to find out what happened there. But this is one of the exemptions they have, is the Hillary calendar only shows official events. So if she's dealing with material that is of a private type of nature, for example, Lawrence Rockefeller, who was the person who went to the Clintons to get UFO disclosure, this is all done on a sort of a private, it wasn't an official government basis, this is on a private basis. So everything that she dealt with Lawrence Rockefeller would be off the government books, and she could basically keep it out of all the files that are released, because the only thing that's in her files will be government material, because she was the first lady. She wasn't actually a government official. So that kind of stuff, I sort of realized there'd be nothing there. There may be something in Bill's file, which is a bit more official, because he's doing a lot of official business, even though when they were at the Lawrence Rockefeller Ranch in August of 1995, they were on holidays. and it wasn't the place that they wanted to go. Bill and Hillary always went to Martha's Vineyard. Bill liked to golf, and they hung around with the rich Democrats there. And one of the reasons they went to the Rockefeller Ranch was because this was just prior to the 1996 election, and Dick Morris, who was their main advisor on trying to get reelected, had determined that the swing voters, with the people that they needed to win the election, happened to be people who were into camping, they were into technology, they were into the outdoors, and so Bill and Hillary, despite the fact that they really didn't want to go out camping and fishing and all this kind of stuff, had to do this to try to make it look like they were going to try to get these swing voters. And that was one of the reasons they were there, and they stayed at the Rockefeller Ranch. And, of course, the famous story, which we still haven't really been able to confirm. There's varying opinions as to whether the president was there. And the reason for this would be that he got a letter. This is one of the documents that I got from the science advisor's office in the Clinton White House, was that the science advisor was not directly telling the president not to go, but he was sort of hinting to the president, saying, well, we tried to help Mr. Rockefeller, we tried to answer his questions, and I realize you're going out there to talk to him about paranormal phenomena and UFOs, and sort of hinting that the president shouldn't go. And so, again, there may be a situation where Hillary may have sat down. In fact, Rockefeller's top woman, Marie Galbraith, stated that the president wasn't there, that only Hillary attended this briefing, public briefing from Lawrence Rockefeller, and that the president wasn't there. And that sort of protects the president from getting involved in it. And this was sort of confirmed when I was at the Laughlin conference. I talked to Rob Simone, who actually talked with Hillary at the beginning of February at a high-level fundraiser in Los Angeles. And he had asked her about the Rockefeller Initiative, and he has not provided me the transcript of what actually was said there. But I seem to get the indication from Rob that Hillary seemed to confirm that Bill was not there, that she had gotten the information, and I believe she said she passed it on to the president. And this was something that is very interesting in terms of the 2008 campaign, that a lot of people don't know that Hillary Clinton, everybody in the campaign was basically asked the UFO question except for Hillary, and Hillary has by far and away the biggest background in terms of ufology. The Clintons are very sympathetic to the UFO issue, and she was the sort of the center, place where all the material was going during the Rockefeller Initiative. Rockefeller was sending material to the White House on UFOs. It was going through Hillary's office. The science advisor was sending material down to Rockefeller. This was all going through Hillary Clinton's office, and this would be how they would protect the president. As far as we know, Rockefeller did not get to the president. So what was happening is it was going through Hillary's office, and Hillary was passing the material to the president to protect the president. And there's a couple of actual documents that come out of the 1,000 pages of files I got from the Clinton Library or the Clinton administration when they were still in, which basically said that Hillary was this focal point for all the material. And the second document basically stated that she had helped Lawrence Rockefeller edit a letter on UFO disclosure to the president. Lawrence Rockefeller had this letter that he was floating around for about 3 years. And when things would get a little tough, when it looked like the Clinton administration wasn't playing ball on the UFO issue, he would always say, oh, well, I think maybe it's time to send this letter to the president. And people would sort of talk him out of it. No, let's hang on to the letter. We'll try to, you know, get what you want. And Hillary actually helped him at one point edit this letter. He was passing it around to different people and trying to get them. And the letter was very open. It was on UFO and ET disclosure. So Hillary was involved in this. And so she's gone through the whole campaign so far and publicly has not had to address the question. Now, I think, as what happened with Rob Simone, I think she has her answer ready. And if she is asked about it, her answer will be, yes, she was open to the situation. Bill was interested in it. They did what they could. They wanted, I think the word she used with Rob Simone was, they wanted to be a transparent administration. So, yes, she will not deny the fact that they were looking at UFOs. Now, she may take the tack that a lot of the people, for example, Richardson, who was governor of New Mexico, who was involved in the Roswell situation, because he was so tied in, has basically said, I don't believe in UFOs, but yes, I think we should investigate. The government has covered up a lot of material that they're hiding, and I think we should open it all up, even though I don't believe UFOs exist. Hillary may go down that track and say, well, I really don't know if UFOs exist or ETs exist, but I think that we should open this thing up. So, but it's kind of strange that in all the time that she's been running, and when this conservative situation broke out, the conservatives are very upset about these UFO documents. I was contacted by a number of agencies, by the Associated Press. I talked to Fox News for over about an hour and a half. I talked to the Washington Post for well over an hour. They all have these documents. They all know the Hillary Clinton situation, and still none of the media has brought the issue up with Hillary.
Well, I have Rob Simone coming up next week, and we were going to discuss his interview with Hillary.
Oh, interesting.
That should be an interesting interview.
Oh, yes, because it was kind of surprising. I sort of thought that she might try to, you know, slough it off, but according to what Rob Simone told me, she was basically open and didn't deny a thing. And so it's a positive sort of comment, whether as they've been in the White House once before and tried to get the situation. In fact, Bill Clinton has stated on two occasions, he said once in Hong Kong in 2005, in regards to a question that had nothing to do with UFOs, he started talking about Roswell and about Area 51 and saying that he was trying to get to the bottom of this thing. And in 2005, he made a very stunning comment, at which point he said, I'm probably not the first president they've kept in the dark. And so what I've been looking at now, and I've been trying to coordinate with a bunch of different researchers, the big question we now have is, does the president even know? Because Bill and Hillary, there's almost no doubt that they were very interested, that they tried to get to the bottom of this thing, they tried to get the answer, and that they were basically shut out. They were told nothing. So either you have a situation where there's nothing to the UFO situation, that we're all way off base and nothing has really happened, the skeptics have been right all along, or you have a situation where the President of the United States, who's ahead of the executive branch, who's ahead of the military, he's the commander-in-chief of the military, and who's supposed to be running the show ahead of all the intelligence agencies, I've always said it looks now that the President may not know, and if the President doesn't know, I think the American population has a very serious problem if the President of the United States is not running the country. Because if you can hide UFOs, you can hide anything else.
I think it was Webster Hubble that wrote a book about the Clinton White House.
Yes.
And he, in a section in there, didn't he have in there where he was saying that Bill Clinton wanted him to go dig into the UFO subject to see what he could find?
Yeah. What he basically said in his book was, Bill Clinton said, if I put you over there in Justice, he was his assistant deputy at Justice, he said, if I put you over there, I want you to get the answer to two questions. Are there UFOs, and who killed JFK? And this is one of the other requests that I've made from the Clinton Library, is that sort of confirms that Bill was sort of into conspiracies. Bill, for example, Paul Davids, I don't know if you know the story, Paul Davids met with Bill Clinton, this would be a number of months back, late fall, somewhere in there. He met with Bill Clinton and gave him the latest Roswell book by Schmidt and Kerry. And Bill looked at it and said, "Oh, I'm really interested in this stuff. I'm going to read this right away." That Bill didn't believe the UFO story. He had been interested when I was giving a lecture one time in Arkansas. There's a woman who came up to me who had pretty good, she sort of described who she was, and unfortunately I didn't take her name, but she sort of described the fact that Bill and Hillary had a sighting. But I wasn't able to confirm it because I got the woman to promise she would contact me. She never did. But anyway, Bill and Hillary were into it, and they didn't believe the official story, and that's why he told Webster Hubble to go out and find out about UFOs. But he was also a big fan, people may know, of President Kennedy. He had met Kennedy as a young man, got this photograph of President Kennedy shaking hands, and he also didn't believe in the conspiracy story or the story about JFK being killed by the lone gunman. So when I filed for my UFO files, I also filed for all files on the Kennedy assassination that might be in the Clinton Library, and there are 3,500 pages. So Webster Hubble had gone out to get the answers to the two questions, who killed JFK and are there UFOs? Now, the whole Hubble story fell apart, and this is an interesting story, that when the Hubble story broke in 1997, when he released this book, People and Friends in High Places, Deborah Orin, who was with the New York Post, I believe it was, and it's sort of a conservative, she broke a lot of stories on the Monica Lewinsky thing, really not friends with the Clintons. So she stood up and asked the question, is this story about Webster Hubble true? She asked the press secretary at the White House during a White House press conference, and he basically sloughed it off by talking about an alien. It's a long story. The Weekly World News used to have an alien that predicted Bill would win, so he made this reference to the alien. He said, no, we gave that job to the alien. So she had her follow-up question. She said, is what Mr. Hubble writes in his book true about what Mr. Clinton told him to do? And at that point, he said, the press secretary, I can't remember which press secretary it was, said, I'm not going to comment on what people write in their private books. So the whole thing was over. And in a later interview, Deborah Orin said, she sat there and waited. And she said, for somebody to go and to ask another question, to push this issue. And she said, the rest of the White House press corps rolled over and played dead. And that's basically what it comes down to is one of the problems we have in ufology, and it happens in ufology, and it also happens in the press corps, is that nobody wants to ask the stupid question. I know when I asked the question of Dick Cheney, when you're talking to a vice president and you're going to ask him the UFO question, you feel kind of, well, you know, should be asking this. And I've had about five occasions. I just had another occasion a couple of weeks ago where something very important happened with one of the presidential candidates, and the person who revealed it to me is making me swear to secrecy because they don't want to embarrass the candidate. And so you have a situation in the press corps that they don't want to ask the dumb question because they're White House press people. They spent their whole life getting up into the White House press corps. They've got their little pass. And if you ask a stupid question, you may never get asked another question the whole 20 years that you spend there. So everybody wants to ask the smart question. They're afraid to ask the question. And now we have a situation where, in a number of cases, ufologists are afraid to ask the direct question to candidates to get them to come clean on this subject. The one example that I don't know how well your listeners have followed this kind of stuff, but the one example happened in the 2004 election, and that was with General Wesley Clark, who was in New Hampshire. This was one of the just when the caucuses and the primary started, was in New Hampshire, and he like Hillary had wanted to be an astronaut. But his sight wasn't very good, so he went into the Army, became a four-star general, and was, I believe at the time when the New Hampshire question was asked, he was actually leading the Democratic nomination for the president. So he was asked the question by Jay Buckley, who was a space shuttle astronaut, asked him, General Clark, what's your vision on space? And Clark breaks in on this whole thing about his vision for space, and how he believes we can go past the speed of light, and I've also always believed that, and I've argued with physicists about this, and I thought, this is just bizarre. Here's some guy running for president who believes we can go past the speed of light, and he's a four-star general, which means he may know what's going on. And at that point, one of the people who was related to the Avery wrote me and said, one of the birds says that General Wesley Clark has been briefed on crash-flying saucers. So I immediately contacted a whole series of researchers in the United States, and I said to them, somebody's got to ask Clark, because in the beginning of the presidential primaries, like in New Hampshire and Iowa, they have town halls where they'll take questions from everybody. When you get to where they are in the campaign right now, it's basically just they run the show, you don't get to ask questions, they're not very open, they've got set speeches and this sort of stuff. But in the beginning, I said, somebody's going to ask Wesley Clark whether he's been briefed on the subject of UFOs. And basically, a lot of researchers didn't reply to me, and a lot of researchers came back and said, no, we really don't want to embarrass him. In fact, we had him in Iowa. We had the question set up. We had the town hall, and the question was going to be asked, and the person who was going to ask the question backed out at the last minute with that thing that we don't want to embarrass the person, which led me to say, well, if we're not going to ask the question, if we're not going to push the issue, why would we expect, and this happens in ufology an awful lot, people expect the government just to give up and to just suddenly disclose the situation and just throw up the white flag and give it to us. And I say that ufology is like any other movement, social movement in American history, whether it's the end of the Vietnam War or gay rights or African-American civil rights or whatever the issue, women's right to vote, that these people fought. It just didn't fall out of the sky. People who have gotten issues past and moved and changed people's ideas on things, have people who have fought their way and ended up getting 10,000 people on the Washington Mall demonstrating. And that's what it comes down to, is that when we get in a situation where we've exerted enough pressure and enough people are pressuring the government, then everybody's going to realize this is votes, and everybody's going to get on the bandwagon, and we will get disclosure. But I think in ufology, a lot of times we think that because it's an important issue, the government should just come clean and give us the answer. And that's not how it works. You have 47 million of people in America without insurance. It's an important issue. But still, you have to push the issue. They're not just going to simply roll over and play dead.
Remember years ago, just before, or just after, rather, Bush and Cheney won the Republican nomination, that they were originally going on a pro-disclosure ticket, so to speak. And then once they got the nomination, that just went, like, you know, off the blue and lost in limbo.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's easy to say when you're running. Like, when I was at Laughlin, I went through the history of, like, Jimmy Carter, for example, had a sighting in 1969 in June of, no, I guess it was May of 1976. He was asked by the National Enquirer, and he was also asked in Wisconsin this question about disclosure of UFO stuff. He said, oh, yeah, if I get to be president, I'll disclose. And Bush was the same thing in 2000. He was contacted by a guy named Charles Huffer. Charles Huffer is famous because he got all the Bush people. He was, he said he wasn't a Republican, but he was always there when the Bushes were around. And he was famous for asking George Bush Sr., when he was running in 1988, he said to him, are you going to release the UFO files? And Bush Sr. said, yeah, I'll do it. Tell us what you've got. And at that point, Huffer said to him, come on, you're CIA man. You know what's going on. And at that point, Bush said, yes, I know some, yes, I know a lot. And he didn't disclose anything. Then when it came to Bush Jr., Charles Huffer was there again, and at that point he said to him, will you release half the American people believe that UFOs are real? Are you going to tell us what the hell is going on? And he said, yeah, I'll do it. And at that point, Dick Cheney walked up, and he said, here's a man, he'll know. He was a great Secretary of State or Secretary of Defense, and then Huffer shook Cheney's hand. They go into this meeting. There were some sort of meeting. They came back out. Huffer was still standing in the hall, and Bush saw him, and he said, "Yeah, we're going to do this. Don't worry, we're on it. It's the first thing Cheney will do when he gets into the White House." So what happened was when they got in the White House, of course, nothing happened, and that's always the way it works. Is that it's easy to promise, but they had no intention of releasing it. And it was at that point that Laura Johnstone, who was a real radical person who had been on a number of different campaigns to Greenpeace and all sorts of different things, had been arrested in front of the White House a number of times, had suddenly gotten interest in UFOs, and at that point said, I think Mr. Bush should come clean. And she went on a hunger strike. And this hunger strike lasted 42 days. She went on a hunger strike. And she was interviewed all over America, and basically she said, I want Bush promised this to Charles Huffer. I want him to fulfill his promise, and I will keep going until I die to get this. And she had she actually had a senator in California who was writing a letter on her behalf to the White House. And in the end, she was ridiculed by the UFO community. This is sort of like where the UFO community sometimes can be very harsh with each other, fighting and stuff like this. And at the end, when she pulled out and went to California, and I talked to her a couple days after she had ended this hunger strike, and I said, why did it end? And she said, well, the UFO community, I've never seen as disjointed a community as this. Everybody's fighting with each other, and they were all ridiculing her. And she said, if they don't give a damn about it, why should I die for them? So it was kind of a sad end. She left the United States and went back. I think she was from South Africa, went back to South Africa, but she sort of exemplified the fact that sometimes you have to push the issue. And she actually did get, I can't remember what it was, but she did get a statement from the vice president's office, a no comment or something, but did manage to get there and did manage to stir up America quite a bit. But a lot of the campaigns have made all sorts of various promises because it's easy to do. And even like, for example, Obama, you see Obama is, if you look at his policy, he's not very interested in outer space. He's not, probably not, has no interest whatsoever in UFOs, but is very big on transparency. The problem happens is that you make all these promises when you are running, but when you get into the government, then suddenly it all changes. For example, if Obama wins, he's going to go there, and suddenly it's his war in Iraq. Suddenly it's his, he's got to put in a Secretary of Defense. Suddenly it's his CIA that's screwing everything up. And suddenly he becomes responsible for all these different people, and suddenly they start to back off. It's not as easy to say, we're going to throw all the records out on the table, we're going to open everything up, we're going to fire a bunch of people, because suddenly you're there, and everything you do now becomes a scandal. If your CIA director does something wrong, suddenly it's you that's going to get the blame. So that's why I think they back off when they get in, is that suddenly they realize how big the thing is, and it's like a big machine that just sort of can sort of eat you up and spit you out. That it's easy to promise things, but it's not so easy to fulfill. President Clinton said that directly. He said, basically, we tried. We tried to get the answer to the Roswell thing, and basically, no, he couldn't get it.
Just for those who are not familiar with the Rockefeller Initiative, you want to let them know what that is? Kind of bring them up to speed?
Okay, what happened was Rockefeller, who was one of the Rockefeller brothers, was a billionaire, owned Eastern Airlines. He was the Rockefeller brother who really wasn't as much into business as the rest of them. He had a philosophy degree from Princeton. He was the one that owned the Rockefeller Ranch in Wyoming. He was into ecology. In fact, when the Bush people took over, he actually gave them, I can't remember how much it was, thousands of acres of land given to the government, handed over by him to for nature purposes and this sort of thing. So he was sort of into philosophy. He was into, he got into UFOs. I can't remember, he got into the Roswell thing. He was interested. And he was interested in there was one weird phenomenon he was into, like where somebody has an accident and a woman lifts a car, that kind of stuff. He was into that. He had all sorts of bizarre interests. And so he, before the campaign took place, he was, didn't matter who won, whether it was Clinton or whether it was Bush or whoever it was, he was prepared to go to the government and get disclosure on UFOs. So when Clinton won, he went through Melvin Laird. He used to be the Secretary of Defense for President Nixon, and Laird put him on to the president's science advisor, who was Jack Gibbons. And this is the situation that Gibbons cut him off at the pass. Instead of letting him go to the president, they said, well, let's deal with it here. And so what happened was they had to get some answers, because Rockefeller was not just an ordinary guy. He was a big guy, and Jay Rockefeller, there was a number of Rockefellers in the government, so they had to deal with him. So they tried to get his answers, and first of all, Gibbons tried to get a briefing from the CIA, because he didn't know what was going on. And the CIA, of course, couldn't brief the president's science advisor, because the CIA is always maintained. They don't study UFOs. They don't know anything about it, so how can you give the briefing? So they managed to get a private person, McAbee, to do a briefing, which really didn't mean anything because it was done by a private citizen. And so Rockefeller, from 1993, when this began, till 1996, pressured the White House to release all their UFO information. And in the discussions that we saw in the thousand pages of documents, he went to Jay Rockefeller and described the fact that there was this massive conspiracy, that all this stuff has been covered up, and we want it all released. And what Gibbons had said to him, the president's science advisor, was, well, if this conspiracy is as widespread and as massive and as deep as you say it is, we'll never get to the bottom of it. Why don't we just take one case, and why don't we disclose that one case, and then we can disclose the rest of it? And so Rockefeller thought about it, and he said, okay, fine, we'll take the Roswell case. And that is why in 1995 was the final report, the Air Force reinvestigated the Roswell crash, and they came back and they presented a report to the president on the crash at Roswell, and basically said, no, it was mogul balloons, nothing happened, we lost a bunch of files, but really nothing, no UFOs, nothing out of the ordinary, nothing to worry about, Mr. President. And
well,
what happened?
Didn't they come out with all of that just before the GSA come out with their report for Stephen Schiff?
Yeah, both of them were happening at the same time, and they were both, but Schiff was the one that got the GAO investigation going, and it was Clinton who got the Air Force study going. And there was sort of two separate studies, and but the Rockefeller one was pushing the Roswell, and Clinton was doing a bunch of other stuff. For example, Clinton is famous for getting disclosure on a lot of documents, 80 million pages of documents. Clinton didn't like secrecy; he wanted stuff opened up, and he had this new rule that it was over 25 years. You better have a good reason to keep it secret. And actually got 80 million pages of stuff declassified. And Rockefeller was trying to push this Rockefeller initiative, the UFO things, to be part of this big disclosure effort that the president was doing on various files from different agencies. But anyway, what happened was in November of 1995, they get the final report, and it basically says, nothing happened, Mr. President. And to show you how this stuff works, the president's speeches, whenever a president gives a speech, these things are written, sometimes the State of the Union will be written 30 times. It'll have 25 different agencies signing off on these things. Every word in a presidential speech means something. It just doesn't happen. Everything is carefully, carefully worded. Everything is checked. And in a speech in Belfast, Northern Ireland, he was lighting the Christmas tree in November of 1995. Bill gives this speech, and he talks about Ryan. And this is one of the Freedom Information Act requests I got, and they say they don't have the letter from Ryan. But there was a letter-writing competition from children that they would write a letter to the president, and the two kids that won the letter-writing competition were sitting on the stage with Bill Clinton, but their letters weren't written. In the middle of this speech, Bill Clinton starts on this letter. He says, Ryan, if you're out in the audience tonight, here's the answer to your question. No, as far as I know, a UFO did not crash at Roswell, New Mexico. But if they did recover bodies, Ryan, they didn't tell me either, and I want to know. So that, to anybody, would say, oh, it's kind of interesting. But if you study it carefully, you can see what is exactly going on. Bill was furious. He'd gotten the Roswell report, which had been given to him only a couple of weeks before, a couple of days before this speech. And it basically said, no, Roswell didn't happen, nothing out of the ordinary. But the first report, the Roswell report released in 1995, didn't talk about the bodies. So in this speech, Bill Clinton is indirectly talking to the Air Force, and he's saying, you didn't talk about the bodies in your report. Explain what people, when people talked about the bodies at Roswell, you explain these people with the bodies. So they went out and did a second Roswell report, which I think cost them $20 million, was released in 1997, and that's in the second report is where the Air Force comes out and says, oh, we had these mogul, these dummies that were dropped out of a plane in 1953, 1952, and people confused the date, and they thought it was 1947, and that's explains the bodies. So this is how it works, that the president takes a shot across the bow, and the Air Force comes back and says, oh, here, Mr. President, here's the answer, and they do this $20 million study and answer the question that he posed to them, what about the bodies, in 1995. So we had two Roswell reports, and that explains why there's two Roswell reports. And so Bill is the same thing. Bill was trying to get an answer, and basically he was being jerked around by the Air Force. And there was a bunch of different reports from different researchers that Bill was trying to get information that he would call in admirals and say, tell me what you know about UFOs. And they would look at him like, you know, what planet are you from? And there was a number of contacts by Hillary. Hillary made a number of contacts to different people, and I was actually indirectly involved in one of them, that Hillary was gathering material because they couldn't get the material from inside the government. They were gathering material from UFO researchers. Daryl Sims was one of them. He'll tell you the story about him being contacted by an intermediary for Hillary Clinton. Another guy, his name escapes me, LaParl from Maine, talks about somebody coming on behalf of Hillary Clinton. And I was involved in a lecture it didn't happen, so I really can't talk too much about it. But one of the things was that Hillary may have been at that lecture. It was a private type of lecture. So they were trying to get material. They couldn't get it from inside the White House. And that is probably what I spend the most time working on right now, is trying to confirm the story. Does the president know? And if the president doesn't know, because I've worked on going from different levels. I started with sightings in 1975, wrote a manuscript, talked about sightings, and the whole town had seen this thing and all this kind of stuff. Went to what the Canadian government knew. I studied what the Canadian government involvement was in the early 1950s. Very interesting story about a guy who ran the Canadian government program, who was talking to aliens, all this sort of stuff. And that one really didn't answer the question. So I went to, that led through one of the people in that story, led to Dr. Eric Walker, who was former president of Penn State University, who had like 14 honorary doctorate degrees, was friends with president, all the different presidents, very, very powerful guy, head of the Institute for Defense Analysis, which is the big think tank for the U.S. military, and went through him, talked to him, had a bunch of researchers. He was trying not to talk about it. We put that manuscript. It was published by MUFON. Nothing happened again, so then I went a step higher, went to the president, and now I'm at the president level, and I'm starting to realize that maybe the president isn't the people who really know what's going on, that maybe there is somebody outside the government, and that's always been the thing. The thing is to try to confirm who's actually running the UFO situation, and if that's true, that there is somebody outside the government, then who's running the government? How much does the president actually control? And I've heard a number of times, for example, I had a meeting just after Laughlin, I went to John Lear, and he was describing this. He was talking about levels of secrecy and basically gave me a level that he thought the president was at, which was like way below the top level. And I've heard these stories from various people that the president basically doesn't have a need to know. For example, Shirley MacLaine, in a lot of the interviews that she's done in the last 6 months on UFOs, she always talks about her conversation with Jimmy Carter, that Jimmy Carter told her that it was on a need to know and that he didn't have a need to know. So it's kind of an unusual situation in that, for example, with the Carter thing, the rumored story that Danny Sheehan always tells is that when Jimmy Carter was elected, the former CIA director for the president before does the briefing between that November and January when the president is president-elect. They do briefings on different things to bring them up to speed because a governor of a state knows nothing. A senator knows nothing about intelligence, about foreign policy. So they basically tell him what's been going on in the government. And at that briefing, supposedly, Jimmy Carter had asked George Bush Sr. for the UFO files. And Bush had apparently said, I can't give them to you. They're on a need-to-know basis. And curiosity on the part of the president is not sufficient need. Now, Jimmy Carter, in a recent interview, has denied that he asked for the UFO files from George Bush. But Danny Sheehan is a pretty strong source, and I know that Marcia Smith told him the story, and Marcia Smith was a pretty high-level person in the American government, and Danny Sheehan is standing behind his story from what I can tell.
Well, the majority consensus of the listeners in our virtual auditorium are of an opinion that the government is not capable of keeping the UFO topic secret. They want to know what you think about that, whether they can or not.
Well, that's the whole thing, is secrets. This thing has been going on for 60 years. When people talk about government, they sort of always refer to the government. And the government is basically just a bunch of people who have been elected. For example, the president, the longest the president is going to be there is 8 years. Now, from a number of the stories I've been told, that's the government. And that's why the government doesn't know, is because 8 years he doesn't need to know. These type of secrets, like the UFO secret, is a 60-year-long secret. So what you do is you pick people out of the government who you can trust, who have a need to know on whatever aspect of the thing you want to work on, and those people are pulled out and you have a government behind the government. I mean, for example, when I was, this happened with, you can ask Steve Bassett about this. One of the White House press people, she died. She was a famous, her name escapes me. She was one of these old, grumpy old ladies who just asked whatever questions she wanted. Sarah McClendon. Sarah McClendon got involved with Stephen Greer. She was very interested, was trying to help Stephen Greer. And at one point, she was in her wheelchair, and she was at the front of the thing. She said, Mr. President, she was talking to Bill Clinton. She said, why don't you do what Mr. Greer is saying here? Why don't you open this thing up? And he said, because it, I can't remember his exact wording, but Bill Clinton basically said to her, it's run by somebody outside the government, and I don't have control of them. And I tried to get to Sarah McClendon just before she died. I wanted to hear her tell that story. Did the president actually tell you that? And Steve said, oh, no, she's kind of old. Don't, you know, we better not, you know, leave her alone. And I never did ask her the question, but that is a story that Stephen Greer will tell, that basically you have this situation where the government is people who, they come, they go. It's even worse in Canada. I mean, you can be win the prime ministership here, and one lasted 68 days. I mean, you can be here today, gone tomorrow. They're just not reliable type of people. The people who have always been rumored as being part of this thing. The sort of the government inside the government that's running this are high-ranking people. Brzezinski, the Democrat, who's an advisor to Obama, Dick Cheney, George Bush Sr., Bobby Ray Inman, Frank Carlucci, and these are people who are were in government, but who, because of their connections to military or their Kissinger high-ranking people, are able to keep a secret and actually continue to work on this thing throughout the years. So it's government people, military people, but that's my guess. But it's not the government, because the government comes and goes. You can't really trust them, and they're really not there long enough to deal with a secret at this extent. And a lot of the stuff, for example, you take a look at the UFO thing, is if you have to look at it like it's a high-end weapon program or something, where you have these programs where it's on a need-to-know basis, and it's been confirmed that a lot of this stuff the president doesn't know. He doesn't need to know everything. People assume that because you're the president, you walk in there and then suddenly sort of God, you know, bops you on the head and you suddenly know everything. These guys know very little. The only thing a president is told is what he needs to know. You'll have a situation where a war breaks out in some country, some small country or something. Then they need to know. So they'll bring in somebody to brief the president on this particular situation. But the government, I have it on my website. I can't remember, at the beginning of the Clinton administration, it was like 16,000 pages a day or something were being classified in the government. It's just massive amounts of material. The president has not got time to read any of this stuff. All of it is done by briefings. He hasn't got time to know everything. You'll have a situation where the Secretary of Defense will come in with 200. He's got 200 plates up in the air, different programs he's working on, different problems and stuff, and he'll half an hour with the president. So he'll talk about the two main things that the president needs to know from the 200 things that he's got up in the air, the same with the Secretary of State or these different people, that the president is only hearing the main things. Now, for example, if there was suddenly a break and there was going to be a UFO question and they knew something was going to come, then they would brief the president. Then he needs to know. But in terms of what the president only needs to know what he needs to run his job. And the president knows very little in terms of all the stuff that goes on, all the different weapon programs. He doesn't need to know about all the different planes that they're building and this sort of stuff. If they're going to release a new plane like the F-17 or whatever, then they'll bring him in and say, okay, we've been working on this, and they'll brief him, bring him up to speed so he knows how to address the questions. But there's so much happening in the U.S. government that especially when you get to the very sensitive stuff, it's on a need-to-know basis. And the problem that I have is that Bill Clinton, we know, did ask. So if you're in a situation where the president says, okay, I want to know about UFOs, and I want, and people always have the assumption that if you were the president, I would just keep firing people until I got to the guy who would tell me the secret. But that did appear to happen, and it doesn't make any sense to me that if the president wants to know, and if he thinks it's his need to know about a certain subject like UFOs or this kind of stuff, he should be able to get to the people. But it seems like it's so deeply buried that he doesn't know who to ask. Like, there was these stories about him asking admirals and people who had no idea what was going on, and he was just trying to grab anybody who was walking through his office to find out who had the secret, who knew about UFOs, because he was very interested in the subject.
Well, excuse me, we're going to be coming up on a break here in about 30 seconds or
okay.
So. I'll tell you what, why don't you mention your website again so that everybody listening can check that out while we're discussing this?
Okay, I'll tell you with a condition. It's www.presidentialufo.com, presidentialufo.com. But my domain expired the day before yesterday, and they cut my site off. I have paid the domain fee, but I don't know if my site's back up again. But it should be up within the next maybe 24 or 48 hours.
David says that he's posting it in the room and that it is working.
Okay, so it's working again. Good.
Okay, and on that note, we need to go to a break, and we'll be back here in a few minutes on Eye to the Sky, the UFO synopsis here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. Yeah. And welcome back to Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis here on UFO Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, DeAndrew, and tonight we've been talking with Grant Cameron. Grant, we were just discussing, you know, for a while there during the break about the different conferences that are coming up. And you mentioned there's a couple that you're going to be at.
Yes, I will be at the Ozark Conference. It's in a resort, Eureka Springs, beautiful place. And that, I believe, is, what is it, 8th, 9th of July, or April, I think. And the week later, I'm at the X Conference. So those are the two events I'll be at. And the X Conference will have Edgar Mitchell and some of the Avery. There'll be a panel of the Avery there. And at the, they'll also, I got an invite, we're bringing in Robert Emmenegger, which I don't know if your viewers know Robert Emmenegger's story. I think the X Conference is worth going just to hear Robert Emmenegger's story. His, as we were talking about in the break, disinformation. Robert Emmenegger is the one story that I think actually is a situation where the government did disclose. They actually did bring somebody in, and instead of feeding them a bunch of garbage, half-true, half-false stuff, Robert Emmenegger was a advertising executive in Los Angeles, and this is back in the 1970s. He was went to school with Bob Haldeman, who was chief of staff for Nixon. He was working on the Nixon re-election campaign, and basically was contacted through an associate of his, was Sandler, who worked on this with him, and Sandler had intelligence connections. They were contacted by the U.S. military and were offered a thing where they were going to put some documentaries together. And this had happened before with Disney and a bunch of different people. That the military comes to them to do documentaries. So they were asked to do documentaries on some of leading-edge military stuff like lasers and all sorts of different programs that he described they wanted documentaries done on. And then at the end they said, oh, yes, and we'd like you to do one on UFOs. Now, Robert Emmenegger at that time was totally skeptical, couldn't care less about UFOs, and was, like, shocked that the U.S. military was suddenly asking him to do a documentary on UFOs. To make a long story short, what happened was he had complete access to all the Blue Book directors, friend, Coleman, who was the publicity guy for the Air Force on Blue Book, was directing him, giving him material. And Robert Emmenegger will tell this story about how they were taken to Norton Air Force Base, and they were told about this whole thing. They were in a clean room where you couldn't bug the room, this sort of stuff. He would go to the Pentagon to get instructions. He said they didn't sign in at the front desk of the Pentagon. They just walked right in. They were at the E-ring of the Pentagon, the outside high-security area where all the generals and people are, would have meetings. He described all this kind of stuff, and he said to him it was just bizarre, like, he couldn't believe it was actually happening. They were handing over this stuff, and they had the famous Haldeman Air Force Base film. And Robert Emmenegger will confirm that, yes, they did have the film in their possession, and that they were going to use it, and they put this whole documentary together about different stories about a woman in Maine who was talking to aliens, and this is a story that's very significant because the Canadians were working with the same woman, so I know the story from a different perspective, and how Arthur Lundahl, who was one of the 12 people that won the National Security Medal, headed up the National Photographic Interpretation Center, which analyzed all the U-2, the SR-71 photographs. They all came into this little dumpy building that they had hidden in Washington, D.C., and he was very interested in UFOs, and they were told this story, Robert Emmenegger, and they documented this in their documentary about how they were in this room, and they got in contact with this alien, and it flew by the window, and this was all confirmed by Arthur Lundahl. He wouldn't go on camera, but this was all confirmed that this happened in this high-level building in Washington. And the Haldeman Air Force story is the story, the sort of the Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where they knew this thing was coming in, and this is all on film. The three ships came. One came down, landed on the tarmac. The aliens got out, met with the military officials who were there. They walked down the tarmac into a building, and this is a story they were told. They had the film. Robert Emmenegger said he didn't see it, but his partner had seen it, described what was on the film, and they went to Haldeman Air Force Base. At first they were told, no, you're crazy, you're not coming in this place. They had a contact, this admiral or a colonel in the Pentagon phoned him. He says, well, phone them back in 10 minutes. Phone back to Holloman Air Force Base. Yes, Mr. Airman Edgar, we'd be glad to take you. And they took him around the base, and he would indirectly interview people, like camera people, and he said, that must have been something filming that thing coming in. And the guy said, oh, you mean the boat? Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they confirmed, they found the building, confirmed all the stuff that was in this film. And at the very end of the thing, they had put it all together, all this documentary, which is called UFOs Past, Present, Future in the 1970s. And at the end, they basically were told the film couldn't be used. And he describes how a guy, a heavyset guy in a little tiny Datsun, drove across America back to the Pentagon, taking this Holloman film back to the Pentagon. And then he will describe it at the X conference, another story that he had, because he was closely associated with but this all tied into the Nixons. And the question was Richard Nixon behind this? And Robert Amenegger will say, well, I really don't know. His communication guy was in contact with Amenegger almost every day while this documentary was going on. And then in 1983, they're contacted again. And Amenegger will tell this story by a general who was Ronald Reagan's first agent in Hollywood. And this guy went on to become a general. And there was another guy with a PhD. These guys ran the film repository at Norton Air Force Base. They called Amenegger in again in 1983 and said, the government wants you to do another documentary. And Amenegger's first question this time was, is Ronald Reagan behind this? And they said, well, you know, we can't talk about this, and we just want you to do this documentary, and we want Jacques Vallée involved in it, and we want J. Allen Hynek involved in it. And Hynek and Jacques Vallée figured this was going to fall apart, that they were going to get stuck getting burned by disinformation, and they turned it down. And he will tell the story about this general talking about being inside a UFO with J. Allen Hynek in the room, and he said you could see Hynek's face, his jaw just dropped. And you could see the expression on his face, like, I never knew this was all going on. They never told me. So it's an incredibly, and this is a guy who's never really been involved in UFOs. His wife, he tells me these stories about him and his wife. His wife's into this kind of stuff. But he only had this one involvement in UFOs in his whole life. This was this documentary that he was asked to do. And he will be at the X conference. And I suggested that they bring him. And they took my advice to bring this guy to the X conference because it is a disclosure conference. And this is the one example, I think, of a clean disclosure by the U.S. government. And it happened in the early 1970s. And at the end, they sort of backed away, pulled the film, which doesn't surprise me, and then tried it again when Ronald Reagan came in. And
isn't that the documentary that they had, the guy that did Twilight Zone, his name is...
Yeah, the second one. They did one in 1974. Rod Sterling did the they redid it in 1979 with him narrating. Yes, that was the same
actually
document.
I had a copy of that, and I gave it to Rich Dolan.
Okay.
I can't remember. It was a crash retrieval conference.
Okay.
He had said he had been looking for that because supposedly on there is some footage of the object coming down at the Air Force Base. And you know,
yeah.
Just showed it coming down, and I reviewed the tape again after talking with Rich. When I first told him I had it, that I would bring it to him and give it to him the next time I'd see him. And sure enough, here towards the end, when they're talking about this incident, you can see this shiny silvery looking thing.
Yeah, and that was one of that's one of the questions that Robert Amenegger has. He's been asked it. I don't know what his answer is. The thing was, the rumored story was that they had to bring the film back. They had to take all the Holloman film back. And if you talk to Linda Howe, she describes that it was shot from five different angles. They had helicopters in the air. They were shooting this because they knew this was happening. And they were allowed to put this, whatever it is, 3-second clip of the actual Holloman landing into the thing. But we've never confirmed it. That is the story. And whether Bob, I'll get Bob to talk about that rumor, because he wants me to make a list of all the things, because I know the story probably better than anybody, all the different aspects. It's a very bizarre story when you hear what happened behind the scenes about him going into the general's office and the guy suddenly freaking out and talking about MiG jets and at the same time showing him a book with J. Allen Hynek's signature on the inside, indirectly telling him that the room is bugged. And I'm not going to talk to you about this. This is General Weinberger. And
these are the kind of things that happen. Very bizarre story. But I'll ask Bob, and maybe you can get back to me. I'll get him to talk about that rumor. The rumor was that 3 seconds of the actual Holloman film was put into the actual documentary, and the rest of it had to be returned to the Pentagon. And the Holloman Air Force Base story is a very interesting one because it always ties into the presidents. There's a guy running around. It's hard to confirm these stories. There was a guy who had worked in the Jimmy Carter White House who claimed to have been involved in Jimmy Carter's briefing, and his description was that Jimmy Carter was shown a 15-minute color film of a landing of a UFO. The same with Gerald Ford confirmed that the Holloman Air Force Base film had been part of his briefing. And so this Holloman film seems to be a very famous sort of film that seems to get moved around, and the other rumor was it was sort of where the idea came from, Close Encounters. It's basically the Close Encounter of the Third Kind story, which was Jimmy Carter's favorite movie. He had seen it numerous times.
I can't remember the astronaut's name, but one of the shuttle astronauts had claimed that he was shown footage of an alien craft and a bunch of other alien-related things.
I'm not sure. There was Cooper's one at Edwards, but it didn't involve aliens. It involved a landing of a craft there at Edwards. There was
that was
the one that I think Cooper had given instruction to Bill Clinton's Secretary of Defense. I can't remember what the word, they have a word like how you track something. He'd given him the tracking to track this film, and that Cohen, who was the Secretary of Defense, had tried to confirm this film and was basically denied. He couldn't get the film. And that was the Secretary of Defense. So, but the Holloman one is sort of a classic. And, for example, we were talking about Richard Doty before. One of the things I've asked Bob to detail in his lecture is how he knows it happened in 1970 or 1971. Because Richard Doty's running around telling everybody it happened in 1964 and the aliens landed in the wrong place and all this nonsense and stuff. And it gets Bob very upset. So I said, you confirm. And the reason he knows it happened in 1971, because he was on the base. And he went and he talked to the different people who were involved and indirectly talking to people who were involved when this thing happened and confirming what the date was. And a lot of people still believe the 64 because Richard Doty has given it a lot of publicity. It happened in 64. It didn't happen in early 1970 or 71, somewhere in there.
Well, and as I mentioned while we were at break, I don't trust Doty.
Yeah, I've had some. Yeah.
He is a snake in the grass.
Yeah, I think he loves it. I've dealt with him since the MJ-12 because I wrote the book UFOs, MJ-12, and the Government. So we were tracking the MJ-12 document from the minute it broke. Bill Moore got Jamie Chandray, and Jamie Chandray has an intelligence background. That's why Jamie Chandray got the document mailed to him. He was the intelligence guy. And so they had it in 1984. 1987, they released it in Washington at the MUFON conference. And only days after that, Bill Steinman, who was a researcher who's now pulled out of the field from California, had it, and he contacted Dr. Eric Walker. This is the guy we wrote the book on. And he said, Dr. Walker, I have this document here, an MJ-12 magic document, and it talks about the MJ-12. And Walker cut him off, and he said, look, I've known of them for 40 years. Leave it alone. There's nothing you can do about it. You're up against the windmills. Go do something else. And so this is like just days after the document was made public, here's a guy, high-ranking guy, who we always believed knew what was going on, basically said, I've known of them, MJ-12, for 40 years. The interview took place in 1987, which goes back to 1947. So from the word go, I believe the MJ-12 thing was real, that there was an MJ-12, because Walker was basically confirming this. And later on in interviews, he would say, there's more than they were being asked, are there more than 12? Yes. Are they all Americans? No, you're trying to get answers out of me. I don't want to talk about this. And he basically sort of confirmed a lot more that MJ-12 existed. Now, as to whether the document was real, because Richard Doty was involved in this whole thing, I think what it was, to release it with disinformation in it. You have a, you have the document, you change it, and then of course once it comes out, then you can say no, the document, you know, the document's a forge, a forgery. But the actual story is true. The MJ-12 story is true, and we had another witness who actually was reprimanded, got very upset at us. I thought she was going to sue us after this book came out. Had told us she had been on a declassification team in Okinawa, Japan, in a general's office doing a declass, and there was four people on the team declassing, and they were in this general's filing cabinet, and this thing was in behind the filing cabinet, had fallen down behind the drawer. And she said it was either the MJ-12 document or it was something very, very similar. She couldn't confirm it was exactly the same document. And she released this, and we were stupid enough to put it in our book. And, of course, we didn't put her name, but, I mean, a declassification team in Okinawa on a certain date in 1979 or whatever it was, I mean, they would know exactly who this was. And she said that she was pulled up, and she was transferred, and she was given a very hard time, and she was very upset at us. And she happened to be related to the guy who co-authored the book with me. But the MJ-12 was true, but then you had Richard Doty and who knows who else stirring up all this stuff, releasing phony stuff like pulling Linda Howe in. And I think a lot of it happened, my impression of how this works is, if you're a researcher and you break an important story, Bill Moore broke the Roswell story. In 1979, he and this Berlitz guy did the first book on Roswell, and they were pretty close. They had a lot of the witnesses, they had a lot of the story, and the government immediately realized that here was a researcher, not like people who are putting out, you know, garbage stories that everybody laughs at and have no credibility. Here was a guy who suddenly had immediate credibility, who had a story that was a bestseller, and suddenly everybody was interviewing him, and it was at that point that Bill Moore was contacted, and he was contacted on the publicity tour for the Roswell book. And this is the Falcon. This isn't Doty. This is the actual Falcon. Contacted him. He was contacted in New Mexico, and he was also contacted in Nebraska by this guy. And the way they hooked him, Bill Moore, he was a smart guy, and he thought he knew everything. And they basically said to him, you're the only guy in the UFO field that knows, who knows what they're talking about. We want to talk to you. And so what they did is they set him up with some, my impression, they set him up with real stuff, false stuff. And they basically told him, a lot of this stuff's going to be disinformation. You're the guy. You got to figure out what's true and what's not true, and we'll try to help you, but you got to remember there's disinformation. So Bill Moore goes into this thing, and he figured he was smart enough to be able to separate the wheat from the chaff, and that he could find out what was real, what wasn't real. And he was digging and trying to find out what MJ-12, who was behind this, all this sort of stuff. He did all this, and it ended up, of course, blowing up in his face because the MJ-12 document got into so much trouble, and he got involved in the Benowitz case. So anyway, he got knocked out. But another situation happened, Linda Howe. Linda Howe, in 1983, produces the first major documentary on the cattle mutilations. She wins an Emmy, a local Emmy in Denver, for this thing. Immediately, Richard Doty calls her into Kirkland Air Force Base, sits her down and says, they're very upset about your documentary. Oh, who's they? And so she goes into this whole thing. Well, they want to give you this kind of stuff. They want to give you this MJ-12. We want to help you, all this sort of stuff. And they're basically setting her up. So they show her the document, and her MJ-12 document, her presidential briefing document, has Aztec in it. Bill Moore's didn't have Aztec. So they're trying to set her and to discredit her because of this documentary she had done. And this happens all the time. Same as John Lear became very, very prominent. Is the son of the guy who invented the Lear jet, got into UFOs in Las Vegas, and suddenly Bob Lazar shows up. And he gets into this Bob Lazar story and ends up getting discredited by this whole thing. So this is what I think basically happens, is they try to discredit people who get a foothold and get something going. And I remember talking to Bill Moore, thought that Linda Howe was being deceived. And he said, he made some comments. So I talked to Bill and I said, well, Bill, because they're both dealing with Richard Doty, I said, Bill, don't you think you're pouring your coffee out of the same pot as she is? And he said, well, no, I like my coffee black. She likes hers with lots of cream and sugar. And in the end, Linda Howe survived, and he didn't. And Linda Howe has been able to sort of slough this stuff off. But Linda Howe, and that's, if you're a prominent researcher and you get a foothold, they're going to try to come after you with some bizarre story. And if you bite the story and you go with it, and then once it becomes shown as a hoax, then suddenly you lose your credibility, and they have what they want. That's my impression of what goes on here.
Well, didn't they also approach Timothy Good of England?
Yes, he was originally given the document, and that's how they forced Bill Moore to release the document, is he found out that Tim Good had it, and Tim Good was putting it in his book. So they were forced to expose the document at the conference in Washington. They weren't prepared. Him and Friedman and Shandera were still researching the document and didn't want to, but this inside source had said it's going to be released someplace else, and they found out it was Timothy Good. Now, Timothy Good has never, he said it was an intelligence person. He's never confirmed who gave him the document. But whether it was Richard Doty or who it was, I think he's denied that. But that's the way they work. They try to get you off balance, to try to discredit you, and which sort of makes me feel bad because I've never, ever been approached with somebody with some bizarre new documents type thing, and I figure, like, I mean, am I that far off the track that they're not coming after me? I did have one case where a guy wrote me and he said, I've got these documents and they talk about Douglas aircraft, UFO work and anti-gravity work or experiments were being done by Douglas aircraft. And I said, oh, fine, who are you? And it became the cloak and dagger, I can't tell you who I am. And so I figured, finally, you know, all these years, you know, finally someone's coming to me and they're going to, you know, give me this stuff and it's probably going to be phony, but let's play the game and let's find out, you know, why are you keeping the secret? Why didn't you just come out? And in the end, the documents, and we did put them on the internet, the whole series of these documents, about 270 pages, and they were from Douglas. It was Bob Wood that was running the program, and Bob Wood was very upset when he first heard that I had these documents. And basically, it turned out it was no cloak and dagger thing. It was basically some guy who had bought a place, I think it was in Washington State, he bought this farm, and they had been running this sort of program where Bob Wood was interested in UFOs, so it wasn't Douglas Aircraft that was really subsidizing the whole thing. Bob had people, and they were working on these different things, and they had this one guy, they were working on abductees, and one of the person who was brought in from the outside to work with these abductees or to do the hypnosis, I can't remember what the exact connection was, this guy had his set of documents. Each of them had their set of documents, of these, and they were called Douglas private documents or something on the cover pages, and this guy died, and he was in Washington, and he had these documents in his in the barn. So the guy that was releasing the documents to me had bought the farm and had found the guy who sold the documents, the guy who got them, bought them on eBay for $29 and from this barn in Washington where this guy had died. So it turned out it wasn't like top secret documents where it was the government, because anything that doesn't deal with the government really isn't that significant. Douglas Aircraft, lots of the aircraft companies have probably run different types of experiments. So even though they're very interesting, showing Douglas Aircraft working on this kind of stuff is really not significant. So I've really never been contacted by, you know, an inside government source, or even on the president. I've never had anybody coming and saying, I worked for the president, and here's the real story. This is what's going on, which kind of disappoints me. I've actually had, in a situation just in the last day, somebody who's put me in contact with somebody in the Clinton campaign who's fairly high up. So we'll see where that goes, but the Clintons really didn't know anything. But that sort of makes me sort of wonder, again, what the president knows, because I've been to lots of archives, and I've sat there, and a lot of the times I'm sitting there reading all sorts of other stuff about what's going on in the White House rather than UFO stuff, because there really is nothing there. And then you start to wonder, you know, you go to the Eisenhower Library, it has 5 documents out of 28 million pages, and you start sitting there wondering to yourself, maybe there's nothing to this. And if I hadn't had a sighting, dramatic sightings, a number of dramatic sightings in May, June, July, of August, and August of 1975, I would maybe even at times quit, because you go into the presidential libraries and there's really nothing there, which makes me really confirm to me that the president either really doesn't know, or it's all being done off the record. And I've got a quote. I just put an article on the internet, just it's published around different places. It talks about the last 3 candidates and what their position is on outer space, on disclosure, and all this sort of stuff. And I found I'll quickly read it to you. There's a really interesting quote from Hillary, which I really, about where nothing is done in writing. Dick Cheney talked about this.
His files were at the University of Wyoming, and I was there, and I asked, do you have the Dick Cheney files? And, and the archivist said, we can't see them, don't even ask about them, because they're so sort of secret about the whole thing. And Dick Cheney said, well, I heard lots of people are going after my files. They won't find much because I didn't do much writing of memos. And then I just came across this last couple of days. Hillary Clinton apparently had said the same thing. This is an author who writes on First Ladies out of Los Angeles. She didn't put a lot in writing. She explicitly told me she didn't put a lot in writing because everything in writing, including a personal diary, could become subpoenaed. So here's Hillary knowing the rule that if you're in government, if it's very sensitive, like if it's a UFO-type subject, you deal with it verbally. You don't put it in paper because it's going to come back to haunt you. And that may be how the UFO thing, that's maybe why there is no records, there's no documents, is that it's all done as much as possible orally, where it's done in private meetings, nobody takes notes, and that's the way this stuff is spread around.
Well, and then if you stop and think about it, you know, for the president to have a need to know, he's only in there for 4 years, eight if he's lucky.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a constantly changing office.
Yeah. And his thing, like a lot of people, when it comes to the UFO issue, I always say people got to realize what these guys are doing. I mean, if you take a look at the way they're running for office now, people think issues are important, that they're into issues and stuff. They're not into it. They're into getting elected. And basically, you'll swing from one thing to another. Hillary's talking about health care, and then suddenly the economy goes in the tank, and now you got to talk about health care. That's how you get elected. You got to prove that you're the person for health care. And so it moves around. It's whatever issue is important to the people. And that's why I say if ufology wants to get recognized, you have to make it an issue that will get some votes. As long as there's no votes involved, nobody's going to vote for you. In fact, when I was at the Laughlin conference, I went back through the history of all this that had happened during the various campaigns. And in 1996, there was a guy running for president. He was an independent running for president that had UFOs as a part of his platform. And he said that we weren't prepared for an alien invasion. So this was his platform. He got one vote. In the whole of the United States, this guy ran the whole thing, and he got one vote. So it's not something that, or Steve Bassett ran as for Congress and got 1.5% of the vote. It's just not something that's really going to win you a lot of votes unless some good things happen, like gas goes to $20 a gallon. If gas were to go to $20 a gallon, then suddenly UFOs would become an issue if it became apparent that the government might just have something, the technology to get rid of oil, and we wouldn't have to go and into the Middle East and start wars and protect our oil and this sort of stuff, then it would become an issue. But right now, it's not an issue that, for example, I said, when the Secretary of Defense comes in, he's got 200 issues. He's talking to the President, and 200 issues, and he'll talk to about two or three or whatever. I can almost guarantee you UFOs would not be in the 100, top 100. It's just not an issue that's really critically important. And I think in the briefings, I've written an article that's on my website that talks about the 64 reasons why the government has decided not to tell you. And one of the reasons would be the government really doesn't know. It's outside the government. But the other one is that if you're in a situation that, for example, abductions, if you're the President of the United States, you are not going to stand up at a White House press conference and say, yes, UFOs exist, and I'm not going to tell you anything more. Goodbye. I mean, the cameras would line up, the studios would, everything would just go crazy. And he would be asked, within the first 10 questions, Mr. President, millions of people have been abducted by these aliens. You're constitutionally responsible for the protection of the American people. What are you doing to stop this? Well, the president has no idea not only how to stop abductions, but he doesn't even know why they're doing it. It's so far out. So in a briefing, the way, if a president is briefed, if a president is told, basically I think what they'll tell them is, we're still working on this, Mr. President. The more we know, the better the chance there is that we're going to have if they happen to be hostile. So, Mr. President, give us time. We're working on the technology. We're working on these abductions. We're trying to stop this. We're trying to figure out what's going on. It's not the time to release them. Give us more time to get more information. And when we talked to Dr. Eric Walker, we were pressing him because he was an older guy. And at one point, one of the guys said, well, come on, Dr. Walker, you're very old. You might die. You got your chance to talk. And he basically said, what? We haven't blown up the world yet. What are you so worried about? And that's the impression, is everything's going along great. Why would you release this and blow the stock market out and create havoc all over the place? As long as everything's going good and we're gathering the information and we're getting more technology and learning more about what the aliens are doing and all this sort of stuff, just leave it alone. The longer we leave it, the better off we're going to be. And I think that's what's going on the inside, if the president is being told this type of stuff. He's just being said, leave it, Mr. President, we're working on it, we're getting more material, and anything that we give out, we're going to give to the Russians, we're going to give to the Chinese, let's just keep it, everything's calm. And or a lot of presidents, for example, Kissinger was rumored to have said, this is the hottest potato that's ever existed. Nobody wants to handle it. It's like, well, let the next president disclose. I mean, let him tell the whole thing and have it collapse on him. Nobody wants, because you have a situation in politics that you want to know exactly what's going to happen. You don't never want to be in a situation where you let the cat out of the bag, because once you say it's for real, then it's all out of control. You can no longer tell what's going to happen next. You don't know what the next move is going to be. You don't know how it's going to work, whether the stock market's going to go down. You suddenly lose control of everything. Right now, you've got total control. Everything's okay. Let's just leave it. Let's just, let it be and collect information on it. That's what I think, especially with the abduction phenomenon. If you've seen, and I don't know how many of your listeners have actually followed the Lear's material, Hopkins, some of this stuff is some of the most confirming material that we have of the ET existence on Earth. And some of this stuff can be a little scary. You could twist it, you could turn it to make it look like the world is coming to an end, and that kind of stuff, I'm sure the White House, whoever's running this show, that's the kind of stuff that I think keeps them up at night.
Well, it's well-known UFO lore that the American government is in some kind of a contract for exchange of technology. They allow so many people per year to be abducted.
Yeah, that's I think
now,
a lot
that's
of that stuff
or
coming.
Not,
I can't see. I know there. I had a discussion when I was lecturing in Utah on my way to, and I had a discussion with one of the top people there. I have my doubts. I think you have a situation where if you're an alien, why would you need permission to abduct people? You just abduct them. It just doesn't make any sense, and especially if you take a look at how the people who describe being abducted, the aliens couldn't care less about their feelings, about anything. It's sort of a bizarre sort of thing. And if we've had this, if they made this deal in 1954, supposedly, I mean, why are we still carpet bombing Iraq? I mean, we should have the technology to catch bin Laden. We should be a lot farther ahead than we are right now if we traded off this technology. Now, I know there's the other side of the story that Ben Rich, who was head of Skunk Works, had said, and I was talked to the guy who was in the room that said, Ben Rich stood up and said, we now have the technology to take E.T. home. There's two sides, but that kind of stuff is contaminated because it's coming from these counterintelligence people like Richard Doty, this whole Serpo thing that we gave them 12 people and we've got one of their aliens underground, and this just bizarre sort of stuff. And it's fine, but you got to prove the story. You got to come up with some concrete stuff. The people who are projecting the stories always end up not having the degrees they say they have. All the story just all continually falls apart when these people start trying to back up who they are and how they know what they know. In fact, when I was in there, I was offered a job in Phoenix to work as a researcher on a documentary for this guy that was underground. They had the aliens had this big battle underground, and 66 Americans special forces guys were killed, and at the outside of Kirkland there, and then this guy escaped, and he was run around lecturing Schneider, I think Phil Schneider or whatever, and they wanted to do a movie on this whole thing. And so I went around to different people and talked to John Lear, and John Lear says, "Oh no, the guy's lying. I mean, the first part of the story is true, but the second," and it was just such a quagmire of trying to prove this stuff and to try to get somebody to talk about it, and just bizarre, just unresearchable. So I sort of turned it down. It was like kind of interesting. I can give them all the leads as to where to go and who these people are, but it just so unconfirmable. It's like science fiction, and can't really confirm any of it. Like the latest UN story. I mean, you can sort of start, but you can spend the rest of your life trying to confirm this one story, and probably be no farther ahead than you are right now. You have to have something concrete. You have to have somebody who steps up, who's actually got documents, and it's so hard to follow this kind of stuff. And the fact that we've got the alien technology and we're flying it around and all that kind of stuff, like Stephen Greer puts that. And you know, this whole thing that the black ops people, the government black ops people, the aliens aren't abducting people. The aliens are all good guys, and it's the black ops. Well, I mean, that's even worse than the aliens. I mean, if the president stands up and says, "Oh, by the way, all the alien abductions, well, that was us. You know, we were just abducting people to try to make the aliens look bad." I mean, how many people would you need? Military force people would you need to abduct the number of people who are being abducted, and not have something crash? A helicopter crash or something go on. It, to me, it's just so far-fetched that unless people have some really good evidence, it's interesting stuff to listen to, but I can't really back that kind of stuff.
Well, and in the latest phenomenon on the abduction end is what's being referred to as MILAP.
Yes. Yeah. With the that's where that sort of idea comes, that the military are involved. But then if you listen to Jim Sparks and stuff like this, I mean, he tells the story about the alien standing there in this military thing, and he had the wrong patch on, and he said, well, that's wrong, or I can't remember how it happened, but that you're not got the right thing on, and suddenly he said that the patch changed, the suit just changed, that they can screen image. So, I mean, whether they're screen imaging military or whether the military is, I know a lot of the people who have done the story and that have claimed that they're part of this thing. There's one particular Haley at Ozark that I meet with her quite a bit, and she talks about this constantly. And this thing about, you know, John Alexander and, you know, all the people who may be involved in this kind of stuff. But it's got to be, I think, better backed up. I just can't see that the American government that sort of screws up everything can suddenly run this whole thing without making a mistake, that they're just zipping along and abducting people and doing all this kind of stuff, and then we go back to carpet bombing countries and going back to old technology that we used back 40 years ago. So it's hard to say if it is. It's highly classified stuff. It's this need to know that even the president may not know what's going on, but the people who are pushing the stories, and I'll give them credit, they are doing their research. They are working on it. I think they have a ways to go before they have some really solid evidence that will sort of confirm that this is going on.
This is just my opinion, but through the research that I have done personally, I think a lot of stuff like some of my questionable MJ-12 documents, that, you know, the documents I consider questionable, and Doty's involvement and some other disinformation deals, are trying to get people to look in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
To keep them from looking, you know, say at this group over here that is the real MJ-12. They just have a different name.
Yeah, sure. That's the thing. It's misdirection. It's getting everybody fighting with each other, going in different directions, and just sort of getting everybody off balance and ending up discrediting you if you happen to be a researcher who's you know, whether it's the new MJ-12 documents with the Woods or whatever, that you try to get this stuff and you do honest research and you put it out there, it basically you get attacked by, that's the way the UFO community works, because there's really no money, so it's all pride and it's all people's opinion and their research. So there's a lot of sort of infighting going on, and they have it down where they can, for example, one of the things that I've been told early on, there was a source that came out of Canada, and we never did track the guy down, but he had said, and this was when the MJ-12 document first broke, that the MJ-12 document was a CIA project run by new recruits. It was sort of like, run a counterintelligence operation, and this was a class program that they were doing to try to see how good you could run a counterintelligence disinformation program. And so when you get this kind of stuff, it's so hard to track it, because how do you get to the documents? How do you know behind the scenes how many levels behind the intelligence this is being run at? Who's actually in charge of the thing? Because I know with the MJ-12, we were doing a lot of tracking inside AFOSI, the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, because that's where a lot of this material was coming out, and you were trying to find out who's Doty's boss and who was his boss, and it was like, it was very hard to find out at what level this thing was being run at. Like, Doty definitely was taking instructions from somebody, and he was the type of guy that they wanted who could sort of, you know, tell a story without smiling or, you know, tell it properly, but you didn't know where it was coming from. You knew it was coming from above Doty, and somebody was feeding this stuff. Like, Bill Moore was flown to a hotel and shown these documents, and from one airport to another, and this bizarre story. Like, a lot of these things were going on. It was not one guy. This was, or if you take a look at the MJ-12 documents that the Woods have, I've talked to Ryan Wood numerous times and gone through the manuscript that he got with all the notations and stuff, and a lot of the stuff you can tell is original material, you know, onion skin paper and stuff like this. This is not one guy. This is not Richard Doty running this thing. This is an organization running this thing. This is, who knows how many millions of dollars are being spent to run this whole thing, to get everybody going in the wrong direction and to move people away from where they're actually at.
We have about 4 minutes left.
Okay.
And I was just wondering if you have noticed that there is a change in the way that mainstream media, in like CNN, NBC, CBS, ABC, newspapers, have been handling UFO stories, especially since the O'Hare sighting and recently the Stephenville, Texas sighting.
Yeah, I think they have. I think the Internet's had a lot to do with it, that... whether it's the Stephenville thing that got going on the Internet, or whether it's the Jeremiah Wright speeches that got going on YouTube that forced the media to... Because the Jeremiah Wright, I had it in my lecture in Laughlin. I mean, that thing has been going on for 6 months. I knew about this a long time ago. The media wouldn't pick up on the story. But the Internet is sort of levels the playing field, that you don't really need CNN anymore. You can put something on the Internet and get it going on the Internet and get a large readership, and the media is starting to follow the Internet. So whether it was Stephenville or if you had Larry King, you had, in that situation, you had Fox, who was able to get on the inside with Larry King. And Larry King's always sort of been interested in this kind of stuff, and he knows it's good ratings. He puts it out. He's got a huge readership. So you get... You have a situation now where media, they still have the same twist, sort of like you know, yuck yuck, but they'll cover the story and they'll put it out, and then in my case with the and I think you're going to see a lot more publicity in the next couple of months, especially in the next couple of weeks, on the Clinton files, because there's the big UFO file still has to come. It's 1,500 pages long. There's a lot of UFO stuff coming out of that Clinton library, and the whole media is now watching that release, this trial that's going on in Washington right now, because it involves the UFOs, where they're going to release Hillary's files or the UFO stuff. And a lot of it, like when Washington Post talks to you for an hour and a half or an hour and a quarter, you know that there's some serious interest. And their interest is a little bit bizarre, that they just want to know why UFOs rather than the Clinton files. But it's high-profile stuff that, I mean, I remember at work, the phone calls were coming in through my main office, and are you going to take this one? Newspapers from all over the place, and this is going to happen again, because it is right in front now, and you have a government lawyer fighting on behalf of UFOs to say the UFO stuff should come out first, those type of files, and Judicial Watch saying, no, we want the Clinton stuff, and everybody's watching it because it's right prime and center stuff that CNN, Fox, they're all watching because of the election, so... we'll see what happens. I think we've progressed a lot in the last 10 years. I think we're way farther ahead in terms of disclosure, in terms of publicity, in terms of seriousness. Way farther ahead than we were 10 years ago, by far.
Okay, we have about a minute left. If you'd like to tell about your current projects, website, speaking tour.
Okay, my current stuff is working on the 2008 election. The lecture I give in across the states right now is the one on the 2008. I go through all the different campaigns, all the different people that were approached, Kucinich, the Shirley MacLaine involvement, the Hillary thing. I am moving more and more towards the files. I have 30,000 pages under review for the Clintons on UFOs that are under review for me. So you're going to see a lot of that material coming out. And I guess people want to watch, they just watch my website, not the main page. You can go to the main page, presidentialufo.com, but then go to the news update page. Almost every day I have two stories on there. I have all sorts of interesting stuff about the latest one I have on there going on will be about disclosure, how all three candidates view disclosure, space, transition, open government, this sort of stuff. Watch the news update page, and you'll be able to keep track. There's a lot of interesting stuff happening, and I try to update it every day at my website, presidentialufo.com.
I thank you very much. You've been a great guest tonight. I enjoyed this a lot.
Okay, thanks for having me, and hopefully we'll see you at the next conference, and we'll maybe catch up and talk about something else again.
That would be great. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for tonight. I want to thank everyone for tuning in and also thank all those who joined us in the Pal Talk Auditorium. Stay tuned for Voice of the People, hosted by November Hansen. Her topic tonight will be global issues. Should we be worried or not? Also for my dear friend Peter Roberts, who is organizing one-third of the Roswell Trifecta of conferences for 2008, please check out www.roswellmysteries, all one word, roswellmysteries.com/UFO. And join me again next Saturday on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network for another episode of Eye to the Sky, the UFO Synopsis, where my guest will be Rob Simone. Until then, keep an eye to the sky. Good night, everyone. Hey, that was great.